Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the FTN NBA Podcast. Wednesday, January 26th. You may be listening Thursday, January 27th. We are only a few weeks away from the All-Star break, the trade deadline, the heat of the NBA season upon us as we rear into the second half. Joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg DFS. We're going to talk a quick podcast about players or teams trending one way or the other as we dive into the second half of the season. So, Adam, I'll kick it to you first. I know we have the Bucks and the Cavs playing right now. Cavs looking like a better team for now, just for these 48 minutes. How are you doing?
Poster. Just leave it at that.
Okay.
Poster. No, we talked about it. It was a half poster, but yeah, I hope Cleveland holds on to win this game. But yeah, it's crazy slate. Zach and Eddie just wrapped up their stream like 20 minutes ago, and it's just Harden, and then it was Toronto, and then it was Sacramento. It was a crazy slate of NBA tonight. But yeah, we're just gonna talk about some teams that are trending, right? I mean, we're gonna talk about, I believe, some Joel Embiid, Boston Celtics, Memphis Grizzlies. I know there are a couple teams you guys want to touch on, so I'm excited. Like any time I can talk basketball, especially at this point, since there's no more football doesn't exist. I'm just gonna leave it at that. We'll move on. We're not talking about football.
I don't disagree. After this last weekend, Zach, I'll kick it to you. How are you doing after a nice stream with the legend Fast Eddie Fear?
Man, I'm still pretty tilted, honestly, for losing my personal best 29 days without talking while muted. But yeah,
gotta be aware of your surroundings, man.
Yeah, I almost made it a month, and I said it on the stream. I'll say it here too. I blame producer Thomas because he taunted the guy.
No shame.
He taunted the guy.
Throwing him under the bus.
Wow. Dude, he said in the YouTube description that I was about to make it a month without talking while muted, and I didn't see that until after it happened. But yeah, I'm a firm believer that this is his fault. I take no responsibility for my mistake. But I'm excited to get that new streak started tomorrow and excited to chop it up with you guys after you said, 2 hours with Eddie dealing with all that news. It was a whirlwind, but now we'll watch it play out and excited to kind of step back and talk about some of these teams from a wide view.
Yeah, I agree. And if you guys don't mind, before we dive into trending, who's trending up, who's trending down, I want to take like 60 seconds about this whole Grayson Allen thing.
Yeah.
I know we're a couple days removed from it, but I haven't seen a flagrant foul take Twitter by storm like this ever. I think I am a firm believer that the only driver in everyone's reaction is his reputation from Duke. That's literally all.
Sure.
Yes, it sucks that Alex Caruso got hurt. You never enjoy seeing that. But it wasn't even the hardest foul of the night. If you saw Talen Horton Tucker's foul on Jalen Suggs, he grabbed him by the shoulders and the neck and suplexed him onto the ground. Literally a slate later, LeBron James pushed up, I can't remember who went up for a dunk, just pushed him in the back, walked away and shrugged while he was at the rim. And then you have players who have the audacity, Amari Stoudemire, of all people, who completely diverted Andrew Bogut's career by pushing him in the back and turning his arm into a noodle, is coming out saying Grayson Allen with the pitchforks coming out. Grayson Allen should be suspended. One game is not enough, bro. You completely derailed the number one pick's career, and didn't get a goddamn game. Shut up. Like I understand Grayson Allen has a reputation. I get it. The other note I just want to bring up, I'm not blaming Alex Caruso for getting hurt, but one of the first things you learn, no, Zach, listen, you coach, you understand this. One of the first things you learn is that when you are going up close to the rim, you never, you're coached to, especially as a guard, to never catch yourself with your hands. This guy falling flat, first thing he does is puts both of his hands out and just collapses onto his wrist. Like, I'm not trying to be an ass, but like, dude, like,
What do you want? What do you want? Caruso suspended on top of it?
Like, you want him to just land on his face?
No, I'm,
he's not a cat.
All I'm saying is that I think.
Oh God, Darius Garland to the locker room.
Oh, the tides have turned.
Back.
You never like to see a player get hurt. I understand. I'm not denying that Grayson Allen has his reputation, but let's not act like this foul was a career ender. This super intentional dirty play. Like, it was a hard play. He shouldn't have swung his second arm around, but this is not a play we haven't seen 50 times a year, maybe more.
Yeah, I guess where I'll start is...
Amari stuff really pissed me off.
Okay,
that made me really mad.
That's fair. And a lot of the stuff you're saying about those other dirty plays, hard fouls, etc., I don't disagree with. I am thoroughly entertained by Conrad Joseph Metz VI defending Grayson Allen so vehemently that, like, I mean, dude, a year ago, like, or 18 months ago when we met,
I would have been coming for his head if he did that.
Dude, that's one of the first. He's one of the first players, I think, that you and I shared a mutual disdain for.
Yep.
And the fact, like, we talked, like, everybody gave you shit when they acquired him over the summer. But, like, now that we've, like, now he's full. Now he's a Milwaukee Buck. Now that Joe Metz has gone on a rant. Just, I'm telling you, man. This, like, I don't think this passes up. Well, shout out Javi. This does not surpass Javi's defense of Markieff, but like, you are second place right now.
That's fine. I'll be second place. And the thing is, I'm going to defend my boys. You have the Bucks uniform on. You're my boy. I still have my thoughts about Grayson Allen, but I also think he's an incredible fit on this team. I would never have denied that. But I would have been coming with a pitchfork if you did that to one of the Bucks if you were on the Jazz. Yeah, don't get me wrong. But this has just gone on too far.
I mean, and one game, to me, one game was just for that foul in a vacuum. Like, I probably would have liked him to see him get a game or two more onto that the discipline. Mixing up all my words, been talking for 2.5 hours now. All that to say this, I do think that that was pretty much in line with how the league has been disciplining players for altercations, flagrants, etc., really over the last 2 or 3 years. So ultimately, I didn't have a problem with the punishment, but yeah, the foul, it's like you said, just his reputation precedes him, and that's why there's such outrage when he does shit like that.
Yep, I don't disagree. So we can hop in quick to the stock up, stock down, trending up, trending down, however you want to call it. We all have just a thing or two that we want to hit on as to what the hell's going on right now. I'm going to kick it off with the New York Knicks. This was a team that, Zach, I think you and I both shared a mutual sentiment that they would, at the very worst, not get worse. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe they won, 42 games last year in a 72-game season.
Yeah.
I was all over their over on their win total, assuming, you know, we get 10 more games.
It was 42.5, right, when the season started?
Yep. And I was on the over. Going back, I would have made the same bet again. I do not feel good about that right now. This team has been a bit of a roller coaster for the entirety of the season. They start out hot. I think they start out 6 or 7-1. Things have come to a rearing halt. And Julius Randle is a big reason why. I think my friend Mike, who was on the last podcast, has always said for the last like year and a half, the thing holding Julius Randle back is the fact that I don't think he doesn't think he knows where what his spots are on the court. He settles for a lot of 22-foot fadeaway jumpers. He's shooting 5.5 threes per game over his last 10 games. Like, you see how effective he is when he goes and backs a player down and gets to the rim. He just chooses not to. He just dribbles too much and takes these dumb shots. Over the last 10 games, Knicks 24th in offensive rating, 21st in net rating, 25th in assist to turnover ratio, 28th in true shooting percentage. Over that span, Julius Randle, 16.3 points, 9.3 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Those are all way down from last year, way down. 37% from the field, 25.5% from three, and he's shooting almost 6 attempts a game. If you're shooting that badly, why are you shooting 6 threes a game when you can barrel down 90% of the players and get to the rim? 3.3 turnovers per game. And their upcoming schedule is terrifying. They're getting smoked by the Heat right now as we do this podcast. Friday, they head to Milwaukee. And then over the course of the next month, up till March 4th, they'll see Milwaukee, Memphis, the Lakers, who have Anthony Davis back, Utah, Denver, Golden State, Brooklyn, Miami, Philly twice, and Phoenix. Mm-hmm. They're in trouble. Like, they are in deep trouble. The only thing keeping them semi-afloat right now is RJ Barrett's run over the last 10 games, 22.5 points, 6.7 rebounds, 3.6 assists, 43% from three. You can't do it alone. They're going to need Julius Randle to get back to form. They're going to need a lot more from Evan Fournier, and they're going to need other guys to step up. Mitchell Robinson has been great. I think he's been phenomenal defensively, but I am very, 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 very bearish on this team.
Go ahead, Adam.
I just feel like they don't, because Randall's so important to that team already, him taking a step back this year like he has is even more impactful, because like we've seen Kemba in and out of the lineup the last month, and obviously he was completely out of the rotation to start the season. But like Fournier has, you know, say you take a 10-game stretch from Fournier, he's having two good games out of those 10. And they're probably both against Boston, because that's what's happened this year. They don't have, in their front court, they don't have any offensive real, you know, threats on offense. Robinson can get you the occasional double-double, but we know he's there for the defense. And obviously, Nerlens is a defensive player when he's in the lineup, and Taj Gibson, the same sort of deal. So, I just think they... And Randle, like, obviously not a, you know, spot-up elite three-point shooter, but, like, last year he was obviously much better from three, and that's hurting. And obviously Fournier's getting a lot of money to be very inconsistent. They missed Derrick Rose, too. Like, Derrick Rose has been great for them since he's been there. They will be lucky to get into the play-in at this point, and I just don't think they have enough, honestly. Like, they just don't have enough, like, of a ceiling. And we were talking about this, Joe, before we got on, but, like, unless like they can convince Zion to come play with Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett or something, like they're kind of screwed, because like we know there's been a track record recently of like some huge free agents not wanting to go there. And why would there be a reason for these, you know, marquee free agents to go there now?
Yeah, I don't disagree. Zach, your thoughts?
I'm just so fascinated by, and this is, you know, just taking the player perspective here, because you started with Julius Randle. Obviously they need him to be 2020-2021 Julius Randle and not Julius Randle from really any other year of his career. And I mean, I think the worst thing for Julius Randle and then this team afterwards was meeting up with Nate McMillan and the Atlanta Hawks in the playoffs last year, because
it's exposed.
Well, and you look at his shot chart, it's pretty ridiculous. This guy can only play offense on one half of the floor.
Correct.
So obviously you're playing in the half court on offense, and then you cut
that in half. To a quarter of the entire court. That's essentially, yes.
Dude, like he literally everywhere on the right side of the court, he's well below the league average. Like even at the top of the key from three, like he's more league average when he steps inside the paint around the free throw area, elbow area, but top of the key threes, 28.4% league average near 34. Right wing, 26.7 league average near 35. Right corner. Again, corner threes are supposed to be outside of just straight on top of the key. They're shorter. Those are easier threes.
PJ Tucker. Legend.
Exactly.
PJ Tucker's out here.
Helps us win championship.
PJ Tucker's out here sinking them left and right like the last 5 years. Like he's been legitimately like the best, one of the most efficient corner shooters in the league.
Yep. I mean, you look mid-range from the right wing, 21.4%. The league average is 40. You go to the left side where, you know, left-handed Julius Randle just has made now going to make over $100 million, right? He's six percentage points above the league average mid-range on the left side. He's 4 percentage points higher from three on the left wing. He is kind of right in line with the league average in the corner on that side, but it's striking when you look at his shot chart. So looking to a guy like that to lead you to the playoffs, like much less a series win in the postseason, is probably not going to happen. So I share Joe's sentiments here that it's, yeah, we're the Knicks outlook not looking great right now or in the immediate future.
Yeah. And pray for, you know, Jared Cohen, who came on the podcast, one of my friends last week. He is absolutely the biggest Knicks fan I've ever met in my life. So man's not doing well. We had to buy him a the Bing Bong guy. We bought him a cameo from the Bing Bong.
Oh, really?
Guy. Yeah. Cheering him up.
Yeah.
And this was like right before Kemba came back in the rotation. So things have not gotten better. So Adam, I'll pass it to you. Team player, what's sticking out to you right now in a good or a bad way?
Yeah, let's stick with the East. And granted, they have been better lately. I believe they're 7-3 in their last 10. But I think Boston is just – I think Boston, they're the ninth seed right now. Like, I think that's – maybe their ceiling is, like, 7th. Hornets are 7th right now. But, like, I like the Hornets team better. They play more – like, the problem I have with Boston is, obviously, you know – a lot of turnover from the last couple of years, but they just kind of don't play as a team, right? Jason Tatum's obviously your star. Boston right now, if you look at it, they are top. They're third in the NBA in points, fourth in frequency rate, and fifth in field goal attempts per game in isolation. So it's a huge part of their offense, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And, like, that's fine for a lot of the games. Like, obviously, a lot of the games you're going to have Jason Tatum just kind of isolating and scoring. The problem is you can't rely on that every game all year. Jaylen Brown's been fine, but he's missed time, obviously. But then it's like Jason Tatum's also efficiency-wise. Yes, I know we just had, 51 against Washington the other night, but his efficiency's been down this year. I was looking at his pull-up jump shot numbers this season. I'll just have you guys guess what field goal percentage on pull up threes I believe it was for Jason Tatum. What is his pull up 3-point percentage this season?
I'm gonna go with like 27%.
Yeah, I was gonna say sub 30 for sure. Like, I'll say 29.
Yeah. You guys are unbelievable. It's 29%. Like, that's really bad. 29.3%. Last year was around 34%, I believe. And just for some reference, like, some players around him: Bradley Beal, 31%. Gary Trent, 33%. LeBron shooting 34% off pull-up threes. Embiid shooting 34% off. Like, Embiid, we'll talk about him. He's just different. He's unbelievable. But, like, the problem I have with... Also, I just had a massive sigh of relief. Darius Garland has returned to the Cavs bench. The problem I have also is this team takes a ton of long twos, which we know are the worst shot in the NBA. They are bottom seven. Also, they don't move the ball. They're bottom seven in assist points created, potential assists. Like, they just don't move the ball around. And then you also have, Tatum and Brown can get you 30 on any night because they are that good. But on the nights their shot isn't falling, Schroeder hasn't been great this year. Marcus Smart's taking a step back, and he's been in and out of the lineup. And then Al Horford, it clearly isn't as good as he's been during his previous stint with the Celtics, and Schroeder's your best bench player when he's not starting. Who else do you trust in that bench? Like, they don't even give Peyton Pritchard 25 minutes. I think he's a good player, but they don't give him the minutes consistently. And then it's like Grant Williams, Romeo Langford. Like, I just, again, they've been playing better lately, but I think that a lot of that's because Jason Tatum's going to have to carry this team. Tatum and Brown are going to have to combine for like so many of their points, and they will win games like that. And they have won games like that, but the East is so good this year. Like, long gone are the days where the West is just better than the East, right? Like, the West at the high end with Phoenix, Utah, Golden State, Memphis, like, good teams. But the East is just loaded. Miami, Chicago, Brooklyn, when healthy, Cleveland, Milwaukee. I had to put it in the right order. but Philadelphia, like, I think, and I said, I think the Hornets and Raptors are both better than Boston, so... Yes, they've been playing better lately, but as a team, just like schematically, I have serious concerns about Boston.
I've had concerns about Boston for years now, and I got, I think, Zach, I think we were like texting about it when I tweeted this. I played Boston, I think it was 9th or 10th in my preseason standings in the East. Mm-hmm. I got shredded.
Yeah.
They're not going to make the top six in this conference. There's absolutely no way they don't make
assuming, let's say no team, and this won't happen, but theoretically, like, no team deals with a major injury the rest of the season, or like 6-day long massive COVID outbreaks where they're playing 8 players in the rotation. I like Toronto much better than Boston. Charlotte much better than Boston. Yep. And then the only problem is, like, the teams below that. The only team I could see making a run that's outside the top 10 right now is Atlanta. They've been playing better lately. DeAndre Hunter, I don't think people realize how important he is to that defense. And they're also not relying on like 35 minutes from Clint Capela anymore. Now they have like a two-headed center rotation, which has been really nice for them. And we know the offense with Trae Young, as long as he's healthy, is going to be elite. So I think they could actually make a run. And then Washington's kind of fallen off. But, like, other than that, like, yeah, like, I wouldn't put Boston really ahead of any team.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think their defensive numbers on paper look really good, fourth in defensive rating in the league. But I think that's a big factor of their pace and how slow they've been playing this season. And I think that makes a lot of sense because they don't have a point guard. Like Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, like that too. Like, it's a great point. I didn't even touch on that. Schroeder has played point for them a lot. Dennis Schroeder's a two guard.
Yep. In a point guard's body. Like, he's not he's not your typical, at least for a winning team. Like, you're not looking at Dennis Schroeder playing the two and thinking we're in any sort of good shape. You know, I think
he reminds me of Sexton. Like,
absolutely. Sexton, yeah, yeah. I think a worse version. But
yeah, definitely a worse version. But, like, yeah. Sexton had to play the one for this team for a while. And then the combination of Garland emerging and being healthy and the fact that, like, Joe and I talk about this. Like, Colin Sexton, Dennis Schroeder, in the right offense and the right team, they could win sixth man of the year. But they're not, like, number one point guards that run an offense.
Speaking of Dennis Schroeder, do you guys actually believe that he had an 80-plus million dollar offer from the Lakers on the table?
Here's the thing. What do we know about the Lakers since LeBron's been there?
They spend dumb money.
And they're desperate. Like, you have to maximize that window. So, I don't know. I don't even want to get into Lakers, but then there was the whole John Wall rumor that Mark Stein reported during the NFL playoffs. Like,
yeah, Westbrook for John Wall.
Could they get traded for each other again? Like,
just dumb. This isn't a Laker free podcast today, I think, right?
It's a Cav free podcast, but at the way the game right now it's making it very tough.
My goddamn emotions, prisoner.
Yeah, I mean, just I guess to finish up on just that Lakers point with Schroeder and tying that together with the Celtics, which is a worse move, assuming it happened, offering Schroeder $80 million or trading for Russell Westbrook?
Cool.
I'm going to let Joe answer this.
I mean,
well, I know his answer. It was more
I don't know. That's tough. Because Schroeder is not anything worth anything close to $80 million.
Right. Could get another $20 million player with that money, right?
Like, yeah, what's Russ making this year? Like $31 million or something like that?
No, it's 40 something, isn't it?
It is 40, you're right.
Yeah.
They'd be fucked either way. That's my answer.
The answer was trade for Buddy Hield, I think, and keep some of those other assets. Probably, but anyways, unless the Celtics can package Schroeder and something, Smart and something, and get just more of a true point guard in there, I just don't see them.
And we talked pre-show, there's some Jaylen Brown rumors, like Memphis as a team. But the problem is, if anybody is trading with Memphis, if Memphis is truly like, and I don't know why they wouldn't be with the way they're playing, and, you know, just go for it right now. The problem is you're trying to get an all-star caliber player, and what they need is a wing, which Jaylen Brown would be a perfect fit. The problem is you are not making a trade without giving up Desmond Bane. At least, and I just don't think they want to give up Desmond Bane. So I don't see a scenario where, like, there's been a lot of talk too. Like, do you split up Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? I don't think that's the problem. I just think Jason Tatum, as good as he is, like, this team has too much isolation ball. And yeah, like, we see teams like Brooklyn do that. Brooklyn has three of the best 20 scorers in history of basketball. There's a little bit of difference there.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jaylen Brown is the best two-way player on Boston.
Tatum's defense is really good, though, man. Like,
it's improved.
Jason Tatum might be the best. Jason Tatum is one of the five best off-ball defenders in the league. He is so good at getting his hands in passing lanes. But yeah, Jaylen Brown's really good too. I don't see a scenario where you're a Boston fan. And you say, all right, well, here's the clear scenario. We split these two up like that. I think what Zach said. Like, I think they need a true point guard.
Yeah,
I just think the last thing they should do is move one of the two Jays before the deadline here. Like, at the very least, let these guys play it out. We know it's probably not going to turn out.
Especially because they're playing better lately. I kind of led with that, but they are 7-3 over the last 10. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a situation where it's Tatum, Brown, and then a bunch of terrible players. Like Robert Williams, we know is talented. Al Horford's still a very, very capable player. Schroeder's, we prefer him off the bench as a six man or as a two guard. Mm-hmm. He's still
even
very
like,
good.
Even like a depth piece like Peyton Pritchard is a fine depth.
Yeah, and Marcus Smart is as good of a two way player at the guard position as there is. Like it's not like they're
Grant Williams, the ghost of Josh Richardson, etc.
Man, certainly Josh Richardson was so good in Miami too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway. It's just don't give up on that pairing yet, Boston. I think if you know it's good for you, and I think Stevens knows that, right?
Go ahead, Zach. What stands out to you?
Oh, my turn. I wanted to talk about the Clippers, and I just think they're in a really interesting spot because obviously no Kawhi. There's a chance that he comes back for the playoffs, right? If they can get there. And I guess with 10 spots, you can get into the play-in. I think it's a weird scenario because I think any other team with any other situation, you're tanking this season, right?
They have no picks.
Paul, if PG was playing baseball, he'd have Tommy John surgery, right? These guys are just fucked right now, man.
They have zero capital, draft capital. They don't have assets to move.
Yeah. I mean, so they should get I think they have their picks still in 23 and 25, but it's a swap option with the Thunder.
Yeah.
No pick this year, no pick 24, no pick 26. You're not tanking. You need to win here. And so I guess really like the only hope for this team right now as they sit one game under 500 and they're in ninth. So you're playing right in that nine.
And they are
game.
Currently beating the Magic, which is
sure,
pretty
something
awesome.
They need to do.
It's pretty awesome for them.
You have to win and you have to hope, I think, that you can rest Paul George and his elbow responds well to whatever treatment he's getting, that Kawhi can somehow come back by mid-April. It was mid-June when he went down with the ACL? Because it was end of the second round, and then they kind of faked through the Jazz series like he was questionable when – I know I was clamoring, saying – I said his ACL was torn the day after. If he can come back and Paul George can come back and though like I know that none of the teams in the fucking play-in want to see that Clippers team with those two guys healthy, right?
Yeah, I mean the Clippers if the Clippers have Paul George and Kawhi, like theoretically, like right now, you can't tell me that I would say the only team that's definitively still better than them is Phoenix.
Yeah.
On paper. But,
are we ever going to get this season, at least, is Paul George is his elbow going to respond well enough where he's going to be able to be the player that we expect him to be? Kawhi Leonard, who is, always been extremely cautious with his body and his degenerative knee issues, is he going to be able to come back and play enough minutes? I don't think so. But, that's the Hail Mary that the Clippers have to be playing for at this point. And I find it really interesting to watch because what they have left is just like the shell of an NBA team, right? Like overpaid Luke Kennard.
That's what I was
Eric
getting
at.
Skeleton Jersey Box.
Yes. We talk about a lot of these teams on the pod, right? Memphis, Cleveland, Charlotte, all these teams, New Orleans, all these teams with these really fun, exciting young cores. Mm-hmm. The Clippers have veteran point guard Reggie Jackson, veteran point guard Eric Bledsoe, super veteran Nick Batum, Serge Ibaka's finally kind of out of the rotation. Like, who's the young player? Like, I like Terrence Mann, but who's the young player?
Like 27.
Yeah, Amir Coffey actually got hurt today, but came back and he's been playing really well for them. But again, it's not like it's a 22-year-old player that's like, okay, if things go south with Paul George or Kawhi, like we have this player to kind of try to build. Like, they don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying when you already don't have any picks.
I know, Zach, I know you and I talked last offseason, after all this after the Clippers lost and there was all the cryptic nature around Kawhi's injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big, that team was at a massive crossroads at that point because we have both agreed, this could very well spell the end for the Clippers. And I think we're seeing that road pan out a little more, right? Like that looks much more likely right now than I think the other outcome does. I think these next, was it January 26th? I think these next 2 months will be very, very telling about the direction of the organization.
I mean, it just really sucks because it was like 6.5 months ago that, like, before the ACL tear for Kawhi, like, mm-hmm. that team was going to the fucking finals.
Mm-hmm. They're playing, like, really well.
Dude, you had Kawhi and Paul George on their shit. Batum rejuvenated. Marcus Morris doing his fucking
bullshit. Zubac thing. Was playing really well, too.
And Reggie fucking Jackson was.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson
had the glass
hooping.
Slipper on.
That's right. Like, that's
he was
right.
Hooping.
And, like, so, like, even if those guys come back again, like, that would be great. It would be a really intriguing storyline.
Most dangerous playing team ever. I know.
Yeah, in the 2 year history.
Just started, right.
but still, like, yeah, a team that
most dangerous, like, low seed ever.
7 or 8 potentially, right?
I don't want to play Kawhi Leonard.
Absolutely. But again, like, even if those guys come back, do we get the same Batum who has been, you know, did the French thing and stole a bunch of money from the Charlotte franchise for a couple years and then goes to the Clippers and he's, you know, a passable NBA player again? We're probably not going to see Reggie Jackson play like that ever again. And who knows with Marcus Morris, and Luke Kennard is always hit or miss. So, like,
he's hit right now.
He hit on Tuesday.
It
in about
really,
10 seconds.
It 7 really seconds, sucks.
Or it was 7 point, whatever it was, yeah.
It just really sucks to have that team not be a threat, because that, like, that's a team that buoys the power of the right. Western Conference over
that's
the last
a huge
years.
Reason why the West isn't what it's been, on top of a couple other teams, obviously the Lakers and Portland, usually in that, you know, 3 to 5
top,
range.
Two of the top 13 players in the league, right? Like, out. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. Joe, real quick, I just want, since we're on the Western Conference, I just want to touch on Memphis real quick, just because
I thought you were going to say something about the Bucks getting dubbed right now. No. So thank you.
No, I mean, we'll save that. It's
20 now.
Ooh. Yeah, it's bad. This game's over.
But I just think Memphis still doesn't get enough credit with what they're doing with all the different, I think they had like 15 different starting lineups this year and it just hasn't mattered. And they're doing all this. I'm looking, like, they're not even that good of a shooting team. Like, they're like bottom five in catch and shoot 3-point percentage. Like, imagine if they start, you know, Dylan Brooks gets back, they have more shooting. Desmond Bane's been really good off handoffs and off screens, which has been nice. He's obviously back on Wednesday as we're recording this. But, like, they're doing all this and they can be even better, I feel like, which is kind of terrifying. Maybe they make a move to add an established kind of wing or veteran or just an all-star. But even if they don't, like, Memphis and Cleveland, again, I'm not talking about Cleveland. I'm just lumping them in here because it was the first month or so of the season where I was like, all right, it's been a cute story, but they'll come back down earth. And especially with Memphis, like, they're legitimately a very good team. Are they going to get the one seed? I don't think so. I think Phoenix is clearly the best team in the West. But, I mean, again, we talked about it in the awards episode, but, like, Taylor Jenkins is the coach of the year for me. I know Billy Donovan will be in the discussion. Yeah. But it, for me, it's Taylor Jenkins.
I agree. I think, you know, we talked about it on that the midseason award show podcast. My love for and infatuation with Taylor Jenkins for this award is more so the gap between expectation and reality. Like, people thought, like we talked about it, people thought the Bulls were going to be good, maybe not top three seed good, but very, very good. Monty Williams, the Suns were one of the best. The Suns were the Western Conference champion last year. Like, they are doing exactly what they should and what we thought they would be doing. I think, transparently, I think I had Memphis as like the 7 seed, maybe even a 8 or 9. Like, no one thought they would be top 4 in the West, with 2 potential most improved player candidates in Desmond Bane and John Morant, an outside MVP, outside shot at an MVP in John Morant. Top to bottom, this team, both ends of the court, are just playing phenomenal basketball.
I just looked at the score of the Miami game. I think I had like a 203 implied total all day. 59-46 at the half. It's disgusting.
Gross game.
Back to Zach, you though, Joe.
Yeah, no, Zach, do you have any other outstanding thoughts on Memphis?
I mean, I don't think really that I haven't already made known on past podcasts. I'm just somebody that I continue to eye really closely. Again, sitting there at the 3 seed with Utah, and I don't know if we're going to talk Utah at all here, but they've been really struggling. Like now, yeah, they're a game and a half back of the Grizzlies. Yeah, I guess let's drag the Jazz in here a little bit too.
Should we talk about this Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert dilemma?
How so? Go ahead.
Like I've been seeing like what was it? Like there was something with like
I saw the same thing. It was
yeah, what is it,
Gobert said something about how other teams have guys, and he mentioned like Devin Booker, Steph Curry, just all the guards who Adam, correct me if I'm wrong. Said something about like taking to a next level or something like that.
Yeah, and it was kind of like a
subtle dig at Donovan Mitchell. See, he basically said he indirectly said the Jazz don't have that, which I would argue they do.
But the other thing is, like, they've obviously fallen off a bit. Now, Donovan Mitchell's missed the last 5 or 6 with a concussion. Gobert was out for a few games and is obviously out again with Mitchell here on Wednesday. So that's obviously played a part. But we've seen it. We saw it last year, and we've seen it a lot this year where, you know, LeBron at center and other teams going small. Like, Rudy Gobert is struggling, and it's the reason why he has not been the best defensive player in basketball. It's been Draymond Green. But, like, I love Utah every year I think they might just be a regular season team. Donovan Mitchell's been like incredible in the playoffs in his career already. But other than that, like they might just be a regular season team, I feel like, because in the playoffs, like if Rudy Gobert is, if you ask anybody, is either their first or second best player. I think Mitchell's their best player personally, but mm-hmm. Gobert is clearly their second. If your second best player can't play in the closing stages of playoff games because teams are going small, that's a problem. Like, yeah. So I think Phoenix like is just better. And I don't know. I have some concerns with Utah. I know a lot of the recent struggles have been players have been out of the lineup, but I don't know. Like Clarkson hasn't been as good this year. It's a little concerning with Utah right now.
I think I'm a bigger believer than most in terms of the Jazz hopes in the playoffs going forward. Certainly not going to try to counter the idea that Rudy Gobert is not the most ideal guy to have out there late in a playoff game or really a playoff series at all, where coaches, you know, the best coaches can make a lot of adjustments throughout a series to, I think, counter what they do. But I think I guess the one thing that stands out to me that really raised my eyebrows looking at just kind of the advanced stats for the league as a whole is no secret. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago about the Jazz offensive rating and how much higher they are in that category compared to the rest. It's not as drastic of a jump between that it was a couple weeks ago. It was like the gap between them and number two, which was Miami at the time, was bigger than the gap between the two and like the 20th best team in offensive rating. And now I think it's the gap is bigger between 1 and 2 than 2 and 13. But all that to say this, the team with the best offensive rating in the league is also the team with the lowest assist percentage in the league by almost a full percentage point. They have a 54.2% assist percentage. And by far the best offensive rating in the league, which blows my fucking mind. I have no idea how that's possible.
Because the thing is, you also
especially because they run so much pick and roll. Because they Rudy Gobert does not post up. He can't, which is another reason I'm a little bit worried. Like Rudy Gobert. Like, and there's a lot of centers. Like Jared Allen's a huge part of his game is cuts and putbacks. Mm-hmm. Jared Allen will step back and shoot a 15 footer. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? Like Rudy Gobert won't, and he doesn't even post up at all. But it is weird, though, because they do run so much pick and roll with Mitchell and Conley that the fact that their assist rate is so low, and Ingles is obviously a facilitator when he plays, it is kind of puzzling.
This was surprising. Like, you don't, when you think of just an isolation-driven basketball team, you don't think of the Utah Jazz.
Sure.
But this kind of leads you to the app. Obviously, a player like Jordan Clarkson when he's on the court.
Yeah, Clarkson and Mitchell, really, I think, Clarkson is what's driving that, right?
But then you also, the thing is, to counter that, you also have a player like Boyan, who I think thrives the best coming off screens and the perimeter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
you're just not seeing it much. Like Royce O'Neal, obviously, corner three, spent, like that's the kind of guy that will the drawing kicks you want to utilize. Yeah. But that shocked me.
Dude, you have Conley and Ingles, really. Conley running the first unit, Ingles running the second, yeah. And then obviously they share the court a good bit. But like to just the fact that the best offensive team in the league right now has the lowest assist percentage is fucking
that's crazy. Wild. And it's a team that many people consider a contender.
Yeah. And I just don't think like that worries me a lot more, just like that this team is relying on ISO ball. It shows in the stats, right? Like, I don't know if it doesn't show up as much when you watch that team clearly, but that's insane.
And it's similar with the Boston discussion. Like, Donovan Mitchell is so good, mm-hmm. and he will win you a couple games in a playoff series. He's done that for this team already. But yeah, I don't think Mike Conley at this point of his career is going to post massive numbers. He hasn't. But like, I'm looking at the standings and it's like, obviously, we like Golden State and we like Phoenix over them in the West. Mm-hmm. Memphis is right there ahead of them, actually. Dallas, does Dallas need to get talked about? They've been playing a little bit better lately. They're 7-3 over the last 10. Really. Yeah, and I think that's another team. Like, they need to try to add, you know, it's not the same because Luka's still so young, but when you have an all-world talent like Luka,
you can't let a year. You can't waste.
Right.
You can't do that.
And Porzingis is not like, I don't think Porzingis has a great chance of being the second best player in a title team. But if he's your third best player, yeah, that's nice. I think they need to be exploring all trade possibilities. And there's Brunson talks about like if they're not going to sign him, try to trade him for something. I think half the league at least would be interested in Jalen Brunson. And with the way Jokic is playing, if Denver can somehow get Jamal Murray's coming back soon, all right, he'll be back in February, I think.
Dude, him and MPJ were getting shots up the other day.
I was going to say they're very out, like both him.
When they get those two back, Jokic is obviously carry this team to a sixth spot in the West above 500, and then we'll see what happens. I think the Lakers are going to get better. Anthony Davis is back. But
saw some of that last night, right? Even against the shorthanded Brooklyn team, like they were a lot more potent.
And like that LeBron small ball five lineup, you can mix that in with Davis, like with Davis when he's off the floor. You can mix that in, and all of a sudden you have LeBron at the five where he can just take anyone off the dribble still. So like those are some teams that I think can definitely beat Utah in a series. I wouldn't be shocked if a healthy Denver team, like a healthy Denver team, could easily be like third in the West right now. We've seen this team. We've seen similar with Mitchell. We've seen Jamal Murray and Mitchell have duels in the playoffs, and it's been unbelievable. What was it?
That series was nuts.
That series was the one where Denver advanced to the Western Conference Finals, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that was an incredible.
And that was
when
Jamal Murray. That was bubble. That was Jamal Murray.
Yeah, that was
the best basketball of his life.
Conley in and out, buzzer beater, Game 7, missed it to win the series.
Yeah. So I think there are teams that, especially with Utah. I mean, Utah's 30-18 right now, which is still a good record, but you look at this a week and a half ago and you're like, wow, like they've clearly fallen off, and they have. They're 2-8 over the last 10. Dallas, especially if they add somebody before the deadline, which is in what, 2 weeks? And yes, we're definitely doing some trade deadline pods.
Oh, yeah.
And then Denver and the Lakers. I think they need to be in the rearview mirror. And by the way, Minnesota's actually playing really well right now too. They're 7-3 over the last 10.
Yeah, I think the other issue I have with like we're talking about Dallas, and like, do you think Tim Hardaway Jr. going down now, that might be a net positive for this team? Obviously, you never want to see a player get hurt, but like taking him out of the rotation right now, their defense is only going to get better. He can't shoot much worse than he has this year. Like, I don't know. Like,
well,
more
I think
because Jalen Brunson,
because
like,
Brunson had been coming off the bench earlier in the year, right?
What was that?
Brunson had been coming off the bench earlier in the year, right?
Yeah, correct.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm sure I could find it, but I'm pretty sure they're better when Luka and Brunson are on the floor together, which again wouldn't be shocking because Brunson's their third best player. But yeah, I mean, if Brunson's going to be playing more minutes, I mean, he's just been, and like, that's what Luka needs, right? Tim Hardaway Jr. is a capable scorer and get you 15 to 20 on a given night, but he's not creating as an offense as often. Jalen Brunson can create and run the offense, and you can have Luka playing off ball and giving him a little bit of rest and not having him just have 100 touches per game. And that'll help the defense because Luka's not, getting as tired. And we know Porzingis' defense has been better. Like, Dorian Finney-Smith's a capable defender. So I'll be interested to see if they actually do move Brunson at the deadline. But again, they should pay him. Like, he's good.
The thing is, I can see a rationale for both. Like, I think it has to be obviously the perfect offer. But yeah. I think there is a chance that a team is going to offer something, compensate
a
little bit for Jalen Brunson to fill a need, and that might help Dallas. So.
There's a guy on this podcast who's made multiple Mavericks fake trades that I think would make the team very, very good. You know, you just, cubes. All I'm saying, you got rid of Haralabob, kicked his ass out of there.
Yep.
Bring me in. I got some trade ideas.
We got a little bit of a Bucks comeback, only down 14 with a minute 54 left.
If that
come on, we said no Bucks, no Cavs, no Spurs. All right.
Go get Ben Simmons.
I have one more thing to hit on before I pass to you guys for your others if you have some. This is something that everyone's talking about.
It's a monster.
No one's a stranger. Joel Embiid has been, like, dominant is an understatement for how good he's been. Last 10 games, 35.2 points per game. In 31.7 minutes.
I know. That's what I was waiting for.
Literally playing less than his season average and averaging 35.2 points per game, 11 rebounds, 4.5 assists. 54% from the field, 34.5% from three. That's respectable. And he's shooting 12.5 free throws per game. He's over that span, plus minus of plus 74. Like, he has gone from 2 weeks ago being 40-1 to win MVP. He's now tied with Giannis at plus 300 as the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
That's surprising. I don't mind Giannis being a co-favorite, but it should be a three-way. Like, Jokic
is at plus 400. Steph Curry's at plus 350. These books are really hesitant to kind of just admit that Steph Curry's had a down year outside of breaking the record.
I don't want to say down year. It's been a down last 20 games, I would say. But again, 20 games is a lot of the season, so I'll give you that.
That's fair. Embiid, he's been downright remarkable. Like, he has played the best basketball of his career over this stretch. He's been healthy. He's been durable. The offense is flowing through him, and he's come out and said, like, we've always had a guy that can stretch the, and obviously, like, indirectly referring to Ben Simmons, a guy that pushes the half court offense, gets the man open, things like that. They don't have that anymore. So he's quite literally saying, I'm taking matters into my own hands. And this team, like, with Embiid playing like this, I'm still of the belief that, like, it's more difficult to win a championship when your team is centered around a big man. But I don't think this team is a title contender. But this team all of a sudden is looking a little more dangerous in the playoffs than they were a few weeks. So they're still six in the East right now, half a game behind the Cavs. That will obviously change with
momentarily
of tonight's game. Correct. But the sixth seed in the East is only two games back of the one seed, the Miami Heat, who in my opinion are a very fluky one seed right now. So Embiid is just 7-3 over the last 10. He's playing incredible basketball.
When's the last time he didn't score 30 points?
What was that?
When's the last time he didn't score 30 points in a game?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I got to get the scroll on here. 25 points back on the 14th of this month. 25, 13, and 6. Two stocks.
That was his 32 worst game.
Hold on.
He was a plus 20.
His last four games, he's dropped below 40 once.
Yep, and that was 38.
Correct. And here's the other thing with all this. Every team facing them knows that Tobias Harris is a capable 17, 18 point per game scorer. We know he's been very underwhelming. Tyrese Maxey's been in that lineup. He's a good player, but then it's like Seth Curry hasn't played in like seven games. Danny Green's been out for a while. Matisse Thybulle doesn't have a jump shot, and he's getting doubled. Obviously, the one of the knocks on Embiid, probably the only knock other than staying healthy, has been decision making out of double teams. And there was like a 2.5 minute montage of him passing out of double teams I saw on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He's throwing dimes. I remember his first couple years in the league, he was airmailing balls out of bounds out of double teams. Like, he couldn't do it. And he's not even on the same stratosphere as Jokic still, but like, he's been so much better in that regard. And it's like, okay, if you want to double me, I can make these passes out of the post now. And I can find Matisse Thybulle cutting to the basket and Tyrese Maxey cutting to the basket. So yeah, I mean, Embiid should be right there with Jokic and Giannis, in my opinion, for the MVP. What do we think though for trade scenarios? Because there's been reports that like Morey wants to wait till the offseason to try to get James Harden, but then there's also reports that like, and a lot of people are making the same argument, and it's very valid with the way Embiid's playing right now. How do you waste a season of this in his prime, given the fact that he's hasn't been the most durable? Because we all agree with the way this team's, you know, constructed right now, they're not winning a title. Embiid's got to average 60 a game for them to even have a shot. But if you finally trade Ben Simmons and you get Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes and Tyrese Halliburton and maybe a couple of draft picks, then things get more interesting, or whatever deal. Like, what do you think the best deal could be? Because I think if the Sixers, and I've said this before, like when there was rumors in the past about Malcolm Brogdon preseason, I would have done that in a heartbeat. There were some Detroit rumors about like Grant and some players, Sadiq Bey and some picks. And then the Kings are obviously a team. Like, what do you, if the Sixers can get the best deal right now, and I know Harden's obviously enticing, but like, I don't know how you don't do it with the way Embiid's playing.
I defer to the man who put together the perfect trade.
Seriously.
Yeah. I was about to say, I think that the trade is out there. You go get Damian Lillard. And it's really going to come down to Daryl Morey accepting that he's not trying to trade with the fucking computer on 2K. Like, you are trading with other teams that, like, while some front offices are worse than others, like, you can't just go out and ask for every team's best fucking player and expect any of these other 29 franchises to accept that with what Ben Simmons's value is right now. So I've thrown out multiple Ben Simmons trades. I would invite everybody listening, if you haven't listened to those, go back and listen in the archives. But I think this could very well just go into the summer and they move him then. Like, and here's another thing. Like, I think Embiid has now vaulted himself, for me personally, into the lead for the MVP. And if you make a trade and they get even better, like, he might lose the MVP. So not that that should factor into their calculations on how to proceed.
I get what you're saying.
So you're telling me if they trade like Tobias and Simmons for Buddy Hield, Halliburton, Barnes, and draft picks, you think those three players changes how people view Embiid as an MVP candidate?
Do you think the Sixers are getting draft picks back for that?
No. I should have.
I mean, you're killing the franchise.
When you're taking on Tobias's contract, no.
Yeah.
But say they get those three players, like, I don't think that moves the needle towards like, oh, well, this team's just loaded now. Like, they're still a good team, but like, Embiid's still clearly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't want Embiid to all of a sudden, like, because what if you don't get James Harden next year? And it's like,
yeah, no, I mean, it's a risk that Daryl Morey seems willing to take. You know, I think if it were me, I would have probably made a move already, or at least explored further. And I guess we don't know. He's probably talking. He's obviously looking at scenarios every single day, but you know, I guess if you do move Simmons, I think there's other trades that need to be made. Like, you need to ship Maxey off somewhere, some of those other young guys that they have. Maybe you can move, I don't fucking know, Bassey in a second for like some veteran that's on the edge of a roster that's not playing now for
what
a team.
What about Portland? Because Dame and McCollum both obviously have been linked. Mm-hmm. But I think the Sixers, and Daryl Morey's had a track record with this player, I think they might want Robert Covington.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you're moving Simmons or Tobias in that deal, you're not just getting Robert Covington. So, and then you have the whole situation where Lillard might not play this season. Let's just, it is so interesting. By the way, Cavs final, they win by 16, Joe. Luckily, didn't answer me on our lunch bet today. So good on you. I think it's so interesting with this whole situation, because there's trades out there for them. Like, the Kings are clearly interested, right? Like, we saw the report that they'd be willing to take on Tobias' contract. They clearly are interested in Ben Simmons.
And Ben Simmons, that's a whole lot of fucking money, man.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it would be the most Kings thing because in the last, it wouldn't make
them
better.
It wouldn't, like, get them anywhere. It really wouldn't. Like, you.
Yeah.
You.
I mean, I still, Ben Simmons is now underrated. Maybe,
I agree, but what I'm saying
Ben
right
Simmons
now
is still really good at basketball.
Like, let's quick let's if the Kings somehow pulled something like this off, we know the two players that they right now are saying they are adamant against trading are De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton, who Tyrese Haliburton minus 33 in his sub 30 minutes today. That's pretty damn bad.
Please don't.
I love Tyrese Haliburton. That was frustration boiling over for DFS. Yeah. But say four of your five starters become De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Haliburton. You'd probably put Ben Simmons at the three and then Tobias the four, or swap, or flop those two, flop, swip, whatever I'm saying. Flip and swap those two. I feel like Zach right now. And then you have a center. Like, yes, are they better
then you
than
have
they
a
were?
Center.
Yes, are you better than you were before? Yeah. But it's like a pendulum. Like, are you where you want to be, or are you just a little bit better than where you were before? Like, you're not anywhere close. Like, you're not a contender.
Dude,
they
the
could,
Kings are
not
the
top five seed in the conference.
They could, like, they could go back in time and get Luka and still wouldn't be a contender.
Dude, the Kings don't have a pendulum, Joe. The Kings don't have anything fucking guiding them. And you know,
they have
with apologies,
the ghost of Luke Walton guiding them now.
Fuck, man. Two things I wanted to mention on Embiid. I know I'm kind of backtracking here. I mentioned that he had 25 points back on the 14th. You have to go back 15 games to see the next time he scored less than 31 points. So only once in his last 15 games has he scored less than 31. And
it's not like he's just doing it off like 30 shots. He's been so efficient still.
Yep.
I think in the season he's averaging like 1.1 points per post possession. He's shooting like 52% from the post. Like, it's just stupid. He's just so good.
Yeah, and the thing to me that's coolest about Embiid right now is that he's become a fucking elite three-point shooter. And, like, in the context of who he is physically.
I agree.
And just as a – like, coming out of college, right, or, like, through the two injury years that he sat out, like, the potential for him was, like, dominant post player, dominant post defender. Right? Like, that was kind of the thing, like, that's his ceiling. But the fact that he's shooting 38% from three on 3.5 attempts per game is insane. Yeah.
And
dude, he's taking pull-up threes.
We've seen teams in the past, like, Embiid doesn't get played off the court because, you know, when Doc Rivers is the court coach, like, you're not going to take your MVP off the court. Mm-hmm. But they would pace these games up to kind of keep Embiid out of the possessions. You pace the game up, he's just going to hit some trailing threes from the top of the key now.
It's like, not
he
dude, basically mitigated it's, a defense. It's insane.
Yeah. Like, you can't scheme around him anymore. And to top it off, like, his ego, we know all about his ego, but, like, his ego throughout this run has been quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just dialed in.
Exactly. And I don't think we've seen this Embiid before. I think it's a little different. Time I saw him throw any type of jab on social media was playful against, like, something like his Instagram caption was, Mo Bamba couldn't hold me tonight.
Yeah.
Was that the Mo game Bamba had like 35. Yeah. But, like, regardless, like, look at last season. You know, every time he had a good game, he was jawing on social media. You don't see any of that now. I think this is a much more dangerous Joel Embiid. It's now up to Philly to do the right thing and right now build around him, because this is you need. And the thing is, you look at a player like Embiid with the lower body injuries that he's had at 7'1", like 280, whatever he is. Like, you don't know when something can break the wrong way. I don't mean like breaking a bone, just like figuratively. I mean, like, you need to take, like, the window is open now. And you have no idea when it's going to shut. So, like, as much as Daryl Morey wants to make a massive splash, shake the entire league, get five picks, whatever, like, that's not the responsible thing to do with Embiid right now, in my opinion.
Real quick, the last thing I want to mention about Embiid, and it happens almost anytime Philadelphia's in a competitive game and they come out of it with a win, Embiid's not just hitting, like, game-sealing, game-clinching threes. He's off the dribble doing step backs.
Yeah. It's
what
a,
the
it's
hell?
Slow off the dribble step back. But yeah, it's like slow motion. But working.
Like,
yeah.
I want, we're all around the same age. Like, when have we seen a center be able to do that?
Yeah. I mean,
off the dribble step back, like drop step. Like, he shoots three, like, obviously not the same way, but, like, like Luka, like these step back threes like Luka would take, and he's a 7'1" center. Like,
yeah, he absurd. Like his uniqueness reminds me of, like, and again, much younger when I was watching these guys, but he reminds me of David Robinson. He reminds me of Hakeem Olajuwon. We're like these guys who were just doing things that previously we really hadn't seen guys their size, their stature do. You know, obviously Hakeem, fantastic 2-time champ. David Robinson, 2-time champ, albeit later in his career after a lot of his injury woes. But yeah, man, like he's just, it's, I think we just need to sit back and enjoy, regardless of the outcome of the Philly season, just this run from him. And I really hope it continues into the spring and that he takes home the MVP, because I think, like, he, at this point,
well, he,
I think I'm rooting for him, man.
He would have,
like,
won it,
I
mean, last year if he didn't get hurt, which,
yeah, yeah.
So I hope he right there. So I, like, and like, we all love Jokic. We all love Giannis. Giannis has 2. Jokic has 1. If Embiid keeps playing like this, just give it to Embiid, please.
Mm-hmm. 38% from 3.
Yeah, it's just dumb. It's just dumb.
Dude, he's been a better, like I said, he's been a better pull-up 3-point shooter than Tatum this year. Like,
what? I'll eat my words in saying that Daryl Morey is a GM bold enough where he would have traded Embiid. That's not happening. That is not going to happen. So do you, before we get out of here, do you guys have any other quick player team you wanted to hit on?
Like, dude, I could talk 10 minutes about all 30 teams. I'll just end with this. Fuck the Rockets for being so terrible that they let the Spurs blow them out last night. Like, I tuned in. I was ready for a battle of the tanks, and it was over fucking 9 minutes into the game. I hate them.
I mean, if we're going to tilt about a couple things right now, the minute
a lot you can tilt about tonight,
the
buddy.
The minute distribution in the Charlotte Pacers game. I'm not talking about the Bucks right now. The minute distribution in the Charlotte versus Indiana game.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that either.
Yeah,
PJ Brown had like 40 points.
18 minutes. Goga, 19 minutes.
Uber, 39. Yeah.
There were so many fouls too, though. Like from like.
Goga only had 3, and Goga has the best plus minus on the.
Well, this last time I looked, it was like 140 to 110.
It's 151 to 119 right now. Yeah. Like, PJ Washington just checked in for 1 minute and checked out. Like, can I look? Did he any kind
Zach, what did you say his minutes were at?
17 and a half.
That sucks.
I took the over on 30 tonight, by the way, for anybody who didn't tune in. So. Really that, hoping my guy.
So you're hoping the Pacers can
over,
cut it to overtime,
over
30 right?
30 is still higher than Jason Tatum's pull up 3-point percentage. So that was a nice nugget by Adam. That was a nice find.
So Zach's hoping the Pacers can somehow get this game to overtime.
I just need DeJounte to outscore Ja here, keeping pace as of now.
But I'm gonna close my closing thought with a question.
Okay.
Is Draymond Green the most important player on the Golden State Warriors?
Yes.
No.
No. Sorry. No. Steph. No. It's Steph. But like,
I agree.
I preempted
Steph,
the answer because I thought you were going to say, is he like the most important ancillary piece to his team? Yeah. But like, obviously,
they're struggling.
They would not be anything where, that they are without Steph. But like, they are not the team. They are not a contender without Draymond.
They don't have a title shot without any of the three.
Yeah, I
agree. As much as I love Draymond, I like Steph's obviously the most important player, but I don't want to go into it because we're already an hour long. But I just will say Golden State struggling since Draymond's been out a little bit. By the way, that's a little bit concerning that they're saying what the calf injury he's dealing with is like affecting I forget what it was. It was because he's dealing with a calf, but it was also because of. It was linked
it was,
to something
no, it's,
else.
Calf and also lower back.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's kind of concerning.
That's like a nerve issue. If your lower back, if something happens to your lower back and it's affecting your calf, that is a nerve issue, and that's scary.
Yeah. So I hope Draymond can get back in the lineup because Golden
just
State.
He's kind of fun to watch. Like, he really is.
He's just I think he's like the smartest. Other than LeBron, he might be the smartest basketball player in the league.
There's also Jaylen Brown.
I just thought about Joe saying that Draymond shoots like he has a backpack on.
He does, doesn't he? He's like that kid that pulls up at recess. He's like, hey, give me a shot.
Yes.
And And then he like shoots his shoulders all up and stuff. Well, on that note, I appreciate you guys hopping on. This was an impromptu podcast. So shot the shit for a bit. Talked about some trending players up and down, teams up and down. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, January 27th. Episode will be released on the 28th, Friday morning. Topic TBD, but we will come with something actionable and worthwhile. If you have not signed up for the FTN Daily NBA package yet, you are missing out on a ton of fun, a ton of actionable info, and the newest update, the Optimizer, which features the late swap functionality, which gives you a very nice edge on slates like tonight, where there were a lot of moving parts. Use promo code FTNTV to get 15% off of every month of a monthly package or the overall cost of an annual package. For Joe, for Zach, for Adam, this is the FTN NBA Podcast, and we will see you back here tomorrow.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMets34, and at KowisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.